folks, here we are in Copenhagen Documentary Festival, and I'll be introducing you to an interview for the documentary film American Doctor. I could see it already between Sundance, where it had its world premiere, and Copenhagen. I'm here now with director Fo Sieting and one of the doctors about which this film is, Per Amal. Hi, so good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Would you like to tell us a little bit the genesis of this film?
You know, there are so many starting points for this film, and I always sort of think, like, where should I start? Because if you talk about, like, where my heart and my mind was at, you know, I used to be a documentary commissioner for Al Jazeera English, and that was in another professional lifetime ago. But when the genocide, as it was unfolding, and then just seeing the response from the public, from institutions, from governments, and nobody was speaking about anything, it really crushed me, especially since I have colleagues, you know, who work at Al Jazeera who are being targeted and executed in Gaza. A year into the genocide, and even my former peers, journalists, you know, from across institutions, they weren't speaking out about that when they were talking about Ukraine. It really crushed me, and I just felt like I had to find a way to talk about it. I no longer had any words, and so the cinema sort of filled that void and created this opportunity to speak when there were no more words. A year into the genocide, I stumbled across this news piece. This doctor, one of the doctors in our film, Dr. Mark Perlmutter, he had just returned from Gaza, and the news reporter had asked him, like, Dr. Perlmutter, you just returned from Gaza, why do you think there's no ceasefire? As you can see from the film, like, Dr. Perlmutter, he doesn't mince any words. He says what he thinks, and he said a lot of very undoctor things, but was very clear about what he saw. I just thought, like, who is this man? You know, he's just a regular American. He's a doctor, and he's of Jewish heritage. So the first instinct was to go and meet him, because he was going to be the keynote speaker at a fundraiser called for the Palestinian Children's Relief Fund in New York. So I went to see him. It was a very emotional moment for the audience that mostly consisted of Palestinians, Muslims, and Arabs. And I remember after Dr. Perlmutter gave his speech, the host of the evening said to him, "My brother, I will not forget what you have done for us." I introduced myself, and very soon after, he introduced me to Dr. Thayer Ahmad and Dr. Feroz Sidwa. You know, just watching, getting to know the three of them, even in conversation on the phone before we started filming, I just felt like how incredible that they are so different, and yet they were so unified in speaking out for the children in Gaza. So that was the beginning in the genesis of the film.
So you knew Dr. Perlmutter and your colleagues already before the film started, and you were working as, like, collective?
That's exactly right, collective. I think we started to notice that there were a select few people, especially in the United States, who had the opportunity to serve in Gaza. And when we came back and we were found ourselves in the home of the beast, we knew that we had to do something, that we had to speak about what we saw. And so there are probably close to 200 United States American doctors who've been to Gaza. And we all try to collaborate together and work together. And Mark and Feroz are probably some of the most vocal. And so we naturally were crossing paths a lot and trying to figure out what's the best way to build momentum. Our relationship is purely built on our experience in Gaza. These are both doctors who I probably would have never met before in my entire life, never crossed paths with them from different communities. And much can be said of all of the doctors that have been to Gaza. We're all so very different and diverse. There's a complete consensus about what we saw and what needed to change.
And if I may add, you know, it was such a, when I met Dr. Mark and Dr. Thayer and Dr. Feroz, it was such a different time. You know, it was like a year into the genocide, and it just felt in the United States, everybody was so scared. And you just had these doctors who are unimpeachable in their credibility and what they saw. It just felt as somebody observing how lonely it was. And I remember, Thayer, do you remember when we were, actually you were talking to your mom, and there was in the first shoot day of the film, Dr. Thayer was speaking to his mother, and it was about an event that was happening in Chicago. Your mom had asked you, oh, who's going to be there at this event in which Dr. Thayer was going to talk about Gaza and Palestine? And you said to your mom, oh, you know, it's just the community. Only the community cares. It hurt a lot, but it also made me feel like there will come a time when it's not going to be so lonely. There will come a time when there will be more people who will stand up for the children and what's happening in Palestine and Gaza. Part of the film is also to acknowledge and to honor those who were there at the very beginning when it was the hardest. And that's part of the reason why we wanted to make the film.
The war in Gaza has both been the deadliest since forever for journalists, and hospitals are targeted deliberately by the Israeli army, even though it's against the Geneva Conventions, it's against the Human Rights Charter, but nevertheless they do it. So have you both also been afraid for your own lives because you both are directly in the target zone?
No, I think this is a reality that many Palestinians, being a Palestinian American, have internalized. that this is a fact of life, whether, you know, I have my cousins who are journalists who have been shot and injured within the last 2 years. I have colleagues who work in these hospitals who have been either abducted and are in prison or have been injured or who have lost their lives. And so for us, and I think one thing I'm trying to teach myself and trying to at least break through this mentality is, for me, this was something that we've internalized. This is a reality that we exist in. This is what happens to Palestinians, even if they are doctors, journalists, teachers, so on and so forth. And I think part of what's helped me through the film and through interacting with different communities and interacting with people like Feroz and Mark is that this is not normal. You should not accept this and you need to break free of it. But as far as fear is concerned, that was always something that was, again, a fact of life, something you had to come to terms with. Do you want it to happen? You do not want it to happen. Contrary to some propaganda that's out there, Palestinians do not wish for death. You know, we love to live life and we love to live with our families and we love our children to live long and prosperous lives. But over the last 75 years, that is something that we have come to terms with, that may not be a luxury that is afforded to us. And I'm trying now to teach myself to break free of that mentality and to say, no, we deserve just like anybody else to, and we should fight for that.
For me, it's like, first of all, I didn't go to Gaza. Dr. Mark Perlmutter, he was so optimistic. He wanted to take me in as a scrub nurse. And I'm like, Mark, that is never going to happen. Anybody that does a cursory research on my name will know I'm not a nurse. I used to be a documentary commissioner for Al Jazeera English. So I sought out my friend, Reem Haddad, who was also a commissioner there. And she had worked with this incredible Gazan team, director of photography, Ibrahim Al-Otla, and our co-producer, Mohammed Sawaf. And I'd seen their previous work and what they had done. And I asked Reem, is it possible for us to work with this team? And Reem said, let's do it. Like everything that you see in Gaza, you know, we had worked closely with them and they sacrificed so much to make sure that we got to see what we got to see in the film at Nasser Medical Complex. And so here's me sitting in New York and then traveling to Jordan, but it is a privilege and also a responsibility to make sure that whatever they filmed goes out into the world.
Did your experience making the film change the perception that you had of the atrocities in Gaza?
It wasn't new for me, what's happening in Gaza, or even before, you know, the two and a half plus years change of in terms of time, in terms of genocide, because I was born and raised in Malaysia. As a Malaysian, we learned about Palestine. My history teacher in secondary school, he spoke about Palestine. We also know what is apartheid. When it comes to like South Africa, I remember we couldn't visit South Africa up until 1992. What is happening in Palestine, Gaza, and the West Bank is not something that's new. But of course, as the genocide unfolded, like the horrors of it, I think even for me, I couldn't really mentally comprehend. I mean, watching something on your phone as it unfolds on social media in real time and seeing people that you respect and targeted, do I understand the horrors now? That's a difficult question because I feel like I probably will never understand it on some level, but I can never understand. The film definitely, you know, has taught me a lot about both resilience and also at the same time, just not to stand up for what is happening on a very, very deep level. But as somebody on the outside, I don't know what it's like to lose family members. Like our co-producer, he lost more than 40 family members in the past 2+ years. Will I ever understand that? I don't know. I don't think I can. But I'm hoping that this film will at least help our audiences understand a little bit more our stake in it, either whether you're a citizen of the United States or a citizen of another country in the West. And what is our role to play here?
Were there ever moments when you or your colleagues had doubt to make a film at all about your situation?
Probably most of the time. I mean, I think first, I was not expecting anything to come of the film, actually. I met with Poe and my understanding or my thought was this was another person who was interested in doing something, wanted to speak out about this, wanted to find a new channel. But I fully expected her to feel the same roadblocks and obstructions that we all see anytime somebody wants to speak about Palestine in any avenue or in any arena. And then the second part of it is I didn't know if people would care. I just did not know if we got all of this incredible team together to make a film, if that it would reach audiences and that people would watch it and that people would care about what was happening. And so I still, even to this moment right now, I still have doubts about that. So it is really incredible to be able to go to different festivals, to see it with audiences that we've never spoken to before, like, you know, journalists and artists and, you know, musicians, filmmakers, actors. These are people that we haven't really been able to reach and talk about these days. And to be able to have those conversations and to see the genuine human response to the film, I mean, that's been incredible. I never expected that. It's still very surreal, but there's doubts every step of the way. I mean, I think all of us acknowledge that part of making a film would mean that we would be attacked for it on a political level, especially in the United States. But we know the environment globally, especially in the Western world, is not friendly to Palestine advocacy. I hope that's changing. I hope the film can help change that. But we acknowledged that in the beginning when we agreed to be a part of this film, knowing that we would be targets for people who did not want the message that we were communicating to reach the masses. People don't want this message to get out there. The message, I think, for everyday human beings in the world, when they hear it and they see it, I think we all react the same way. We all react as human beings, acknowledging the suffering and tragedy of other human beings. So
it's hard enough to make a film. I mean, it takes usually an average of like 5 years to make a documentary film. It's hard enough to raise funds to make a film. And on this subject matter, as somebody who is experienced in raising funds, this may be my first time directing, but I have experience as a producer. I guess even for me, I never anticipated how hard it would be. At the same time, you know, once you make a decision, it all chips in, right? Why do we make films? Firstly, I make it for myself so I can make sense of things and help myself navigate this time. And then I hope audiences get something out of it too. But when it comes to Palestine, every single funder, every single decision maker, and I was a reporter for the New York Times. You know, I was a documentary for a commissioner for Al Jazeera English. I was a studio executive, you know, and I was a fundraiser for the International Documentary Association. So it's not like I don't know how the documentary ecosystem works. I think I have some experience, but yet when it comes to this film, it was harder on every single level. Once we were in it and we had to complete it and we had to complete it as fast as possible because of what is happening. And maybe our film can do something and help other people make sense of this time. And to add,
you already mentioned that international atmosphere is not friendly to pro-Palestine sentiment. Have you experienced negative reactions or structural limitations, institutional limitations?
Yeah, there's been some. Whether it's somebody challenging something after watching the film, trying to challenge us in a way to say what I would call distract from the central message of the film. We've definitely experienced that. And for me, I think it's all a part of the conversation that needs to happen. I'm okay with somebody challenging it. I'm okay with negativity. I'm okay with, you know, any of these things happening. I'm not okay with censorship. I'm not okay with blocking sort of the conversation from happening. That's what I'm more concerned about. And I think we see that on a large scale level when it comes to the higher ups at these institutions or even government influence. Oftentimes they try to stifle the conversation. And to me, that's the whole point of even being involved in the film is how do we have these conversations? How does somebody who maybe disagrees with me or comes from a different background, they've seen the film. Now let's have the conversation about what you just saw. I like to believe that I think we all have similar priorities. I like to believe that there are certain values that every human being espouses to at the very core, whether it's the protection of vulnerable people like children or fathers and mothers or families. I think we all share those values. And to me, I want to get to the conversation where you can tell me why you don't feel that that may extend to Palestinians. And I can tell you why I think it does. I think we've seen moments where that conversation is being stifled. That's what concerns me.
In terms of like free speech, how does our industry react when it comes to speech? And one way, they do it through money. To make any kind of cinema, any kind of art, you need funds. And so when entities are saying, no, we're not going to fund films like this, they're speaking. And that is a way of stifling speech. We made this film in 1 year, Christmas to Christmas. First 6 months, in terms of raising money, it was a very, very lonely experience. Doors were shut for us. Doors that would usually open in terms of grants and unrestricted funding for documentary films like this, they were closed. Thanks to the generosity of individuals and people, you know, who were willing to speak through funds to say, you know, we believe in the message of this film. We believe in speaking out for the people in Gaza. Here are the funds. Go and make the art. When people give funds, you know, making documentary, that's a high risk. People just willingly gave. And I will say that happened first. Much later, the institution started to change and the grants started to come in. So as a filmmaker, what it told me was that society is changing and institutions only made out of individuals and they are pushing. And so it's very gratifying to like come to a festival now to see our film like premiere here at Copenhagen Docs and at Sundance prior, because I will say when we started making the film, everything felt impossible. It's just something like we just have to go forward. It's not like we have a choice.
There's this one moment in the film, and I think that's the one that sticks with everybody the most, is in the beginning when there's this image of the murdered Palestine children. And you think about, should you show it or should you pixelate it? Would you like to talk about the scene and how it ended up actually being in the film? And I would also be interested to know, how do you feel about it? Did you agree with showing it or did you feel it should be pixelated?
When it comes to imagery of violence, and my background and my training as a journalist tells me, you have to protect the dignity of the people. You know, even working at the New York Times, working at Al Jazeera English, a lot of times we like pixelate it or we blur the images. We want to respect the people who are still surviving and also the ones that who have passed. That was like the immediate gut reaction. Oh, you know, we can't show these things. It was a moment where I learned a lot from Dr. Mark Perlmutter, because he was really upset at me. And he said, like, you're responsible for this. If you don't show what needs to be seen, you are absolutely 100% responsible for what is happening, sanitizing what people are seeing. It was the second day that I, you know, of the shoot with Dr. Marco Mutter, and it definitely changed the tone of the whole film and the direction that we were headed. At that moment, I kind of knew it was important to delicately balance what needs to be seen and also not to show too much where it's gratuitous. It was quite a journey and a process for myself, for the editors, because I will tell you, like in the earlier edits too of the film, I remember showing it to our executive producer, Simon Kilmery, who I really respect. And he said, I think you're holding back. And because I'm nervous. I don't want to insult the survivors of those who have passed on, but I'm also afraid like people will turn away. We had a lot, we pulled back. Ultimately, you have what is in the film. It wasn't clear how much we were going
to
show.
I think it's something that I was not sure about either, to be honest with you. The point of dignity is something very important to Palestinians, as it is to all human beings. You know, there's always the concern about, you really want to protect the privacy, and you're just concerned about the graphic nature of these images as well. It can have an effect on viewers too, where they'll just turn off. They'll look away, and that's it. And that's, you don't want them to look away. But one thing that really kind of, for me, I think really felt like this is the right decision, is when there was a famine erupting in Gaza, it really felt like in the United States and definitely Europe, that there was beginning to be a shift with policymakers and politicians about this, when they were seeing the images of the starving children. And I've had people in the United States Congress, as well as State Department, directly tell me it was the horrifying images that prompted the action of all of these countries to facilitate food entering into Gaza. That's the power of image. As tough as it is to show some of these images, that's something that I feel at this point in time is a necessity to prompt the change that we need to alleviate the suffering on the ground.
It actually personally also reminded me of the situation after the Holocaust, when these terrible images were forcibly even shown to people to make them acknowledge what was happened, to show, okay, even if you pretend you didn't know, you cannot look away anymore.
I mean, I think that's an excellent example. Even at the Nuremberg trials, they showed these images, and I think that was, the entire world saw them. It didn't just happen at those trials. And I think that was something that really shocked everyone. Everyone knew that World War II was bad and that there was a genocide being committed against the Jewish people. But when you saw it and you were confronted with those images, that's the power of film, and that's the power of these images. There's no words that, you know, everyone knew what was happening, but this, you were confronted with the reality.
Now that you finished this film, what will be your next actions? Will you return to Gaza to work, and will you start working on a new project?
I'm always trying to go back to Gaza. I've been rejected 5 consecutive times by the Israelis, most recently in January. So I was in Hebron working with the Palestinian Red Crescent for a month in a hospital, and at the end of the trip, I tried to enter into Gaza. So I will continue to try to do that at least every couple of months. My colleagues as well, Feroz has been rejected, and he is currently suing. So he is hopefully going to be involved in the Israeli courts, trying to get access for himself as well as other international healthcare workers. We'll continue to do this. And then my hope is that we'll continue to use this film in our circles, in medical communities, professional societies, as a point of advocacy and as a point to start a conversation. Because quite frankly, American medical societies in the United States have been silent and continue to be silent. And so we hope that when they see colleagues of theirs immersed in Gaza, trying to, you know, bring back some of these points when they see the film, hopefully that can help create the conditions to allow us to talk a little more about this.
The film, as you know, once you're done, you're not just done. There's the journey for the film. And a big part of the journey is to make sure that the message goes everywhere. So after CPH Docs on Friday, we're going to an opening at The Hague at Movies That Matter. And that's symbolic for us. And that's very important. And then we're going to tour the United States to different film festivals and also internationally. And so the message continues. And as the filmmaker, like, the work is to honor those who work so closely with us, who are still there in Gaza. And they told us, tell everybody, make sure it goes home to the West everywhere, especially when governments are complicit, whether it's here in Denmark. Danish government is actually being sued right now by Oxfam and Amnesty International, because they're part of this F-35 jet programs, where there are parts that are, you know, Danish manufacturers are selling parts that go into these fighter jets that Israel is using. You know, like, and you look everywhere which way you turn, so many of these countries in the West, I mean, their governments are complicit or in many ways responsible. The hope is that the film can go to all these countries, and it is something for audiences all over to say, hey, these are just regular people, regular Americans trying to stand up. If you're watching, you know you can too.
Thank you so much. Normally, I have the last word in interview, but as this is mainly listened to by Germans, I wanted to give the last word to you and ask you, what would you like to say if there's anything that you feel can be be said, or what would you say people, what they can do to support Palestine and to do something against the genocide?
Thank you for that. I think there's probably a couple of things that come to mind for me, especially relevant to German audiences and the German people. First and foremost, it is no secret that the German government is the second largest arms supplier of the Israeli military that committed this genocide in Gaza over the last 2 years. And so I think there is an opportunity to use your voice in your country to be able to change the policies. Of course, that's by voting, that's by engaging with your lawmakers and your politicians. And I know that that is something that can elicit change. We see it in the United States, we see it across different countries in Europe, and Germany would be a pivotal country to have its policies changed towards what's happening in Palestine. And so the power is there, and I really hope that that's something that they will consider. And the last thing I'll say is with respect to solidarity, really thinking about what solidarity means. I think everybody is connected on a human level, and an opportunity to continue to support Palestinians, whether it's through helping institutions, academic institutions, medical institutions. I think there's an incredible role to play, whether it's inviting Palestinians to come to Germany to speak to Germans or Germans visiting Palestine. I would think that that is something that would be so important. I know that Palestinians would be so appreciative of that. And the message that it sends that there are Germans coming to Palestine, standing shoulder to shoulder, side by side with Palestinians, it goes a very long way. Don't underestimate your power.